Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is Sanjeev Gupta. Sanjeev is the founder of OpsVeda, which is an analytics and reporting platform which helps companies simplify very complex operational challenges. Being in operations myself, I'm really looking forward to this interview. I also learned during the interview that SanDisk, the company I've been working for 5 years now, is the first customer at OpsVeda. OpsVeda is a completely bootstrapped company with no external funding whatsoever. Sanjeev talks about why he believes that not taking funding is very important at this stage of his company, and then how he scaled the company by starting an office in India, and how they got the giant SAP to help them in their entrepreneurial venture, and many more. Without further ado, check out my conversation with Sanjeev, the founder of OpsVeda. Sanjeev, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Thank you, Rohit. Glad to have this conversation.
Thank you so much for being here. Well, let me just first start off by asking you, before you ever started with OpsVeda, the company that you are the CEO and president of right now, what was life like for you before?
Well, life before I used to. So, taking a step back, I've been in the Valley for almost 20 years now. So around the time I started the startup, I had been in the Valley for about 15 plus years, almost 15 years. I used to work at large enterprises. This is my second startup. I started another company about 12 years ago. That was not successful. I ran that for about 2 years and then decided to cut my losses and go back into the enterprise.
Which company was that?
That was, the startup was called Enlighter.
Mm-hmm.
A small company, it's still there. The startup was called Enlighter. And then subsequently, as it was not working very well, I went back to the enterprise. I worked at Flextronics for some time. And then I went to work at SAP, the big software company. So I've always believed that when things are going really well, that's the time to make a change. So people who know me well, they would recall me telling them that this is the easiest job I ever had. So the last company before starting this company was the easiest job. Money was easy, and you know, SAP has a huge network of customers, so it's not very hard to be successful at a large enterprise like SAP. I was always, my heart has been in wanting to start something new, something different, something that is transformational. As I went around talking to a number of customers that I used to in my previous role at SAP, I realized that there are a number of customers who are struggling. The things that we came to this country for about 20 years ago, I first came in here as a SAP consultant who was implementing SAP software for various companies. 15 years later, as I find myself working for SAP, the enterprise company, I go across meeting various customers and I realize that the end users are still using the same kinds of screens that we used to implement when I first came to this country. Now, over this period of time, as individuals, we have become extremely smart, right? We have smartphones. We have a lot of data available in real time. We have a lot of applications which make us so efficient. So I realized that it's time to leave the mothership and to start something on our own. And the initial inspiration was to make life easy for the actual end users of enterprise software, users who are still stuck in the blue screen.
Do you remember the day that you actually decided, okay, this is it, I'm quitting my job, taking this ship and going at it full time?
I don't recall it being a specific event or a specific milestone. I think everyone has a different calling. Everyone has different inspiration or experience. As far as I'm concerned, it was the notion that I need to start something on my own and create, you know, the drive to create something from scratch has been there for a long time. As I said, this is my second startup, which means there was always a soft corner for doing something on your own, incubating something.
Why was that, Sanjeev? Was your family into like business and it was you were exposed to it growing up or something? Why was that desire to be an entrepreneur so strongly there?
In 2003, so true story. Mm-hmm. At the end of 2003, I completed my executive MBA from Berkeley and Columbia University, both prestigious universities. I do recall, as I completed that MBA, I told myself I'm too smart to work for anybody else. Now, this was just a realization, and I'm not trying to be cocky here, but that bug just got in. We suddenly had tools and skills which gave us the confidence and the grounding that told us that it can be done and that I can do it. And since then, it has been a perpetual process. It has been a perpetual process. It's never about, is it possible? Is it doable? Can I do it? It was just about what is the right idea and what is the right time. Now, from a family perspective, I do have a spouse. She had a fantastic job, which means that support at home makes it easier for the founder to go try to change the world. If you don't have that support, then you are worried about, if you're worried about bread and butter, it's very hard to launch something. So clearly, there was no family background, it's just that there was family support.
I see. Okay. Family background in the sense. So how was life like growing up for you? Where did you grow up?
So I'm originally from India. My parents, my dad was in the Indian Air Force. So we used to move around various cities. So I would say cosmopolitan India. I've been in Bangalore. That's where I did my major schooling. I did my engineering from NIT Allahabad in northern India. And then immediately after engineering, I did some of my initial jobs were in Bombay at a company called Larsen & Toubro. So large engineering company. So I did spend the early years in India.
So when you finally decided, right? So you spent your early years in India. You came here as an SAP consultant and eventually started working at SAP after your master's. Then you decided, you said, as you just said earlier, you decided you wanted to do something on your own. And you are trying to solve this problem that users had, which was there for the last 15 years that you were in the industry. So what was the next steps for you? What did you go about doing once you had this idea?
So starting a company, while it sounds extremely glamorous, I think that my journey tells me that starting a company is starting with an idea, beginning to recruit people who would share in the vision. So early on, first, while being employed, you try to go recruit people and you try to go further that idea. My experience over the months that passed by, I realized that it's not going to happen till you actually jump. So I decided one fine day that it has been quite some time. I've been trying to incubate this idea. It's time to leave. So around middle of 2010, I left the security of SAP and started this company called OpsVeda.
So now, how long did you try to incubate it while doing the full-time job that you realized it didn't work out?
It was about 6 months prior to that.
Okay.
About 6 months. 6 months trying to hone in on the idea, trying to build a business case, trying to recruit a team, the initial set of people who are going to join you in the journey. People start joining you in the journey when they see that you have already taken the leap. Mm-hmm. Right. So once I took the leap, that I started the process of recruiting some of our initial team members, and so that's how it gets started.
I see. It was called as something else when you first started, right? What was it?
When we first started, we called the company VSSOD. So it was called Value Software Solutions On Demand. Cloud and on demand was really good buzzwords at that time. So we said Value Software Solution because as a team we couldn't come together with a fantastic name. So we said let's go figure out what we really want to do and then we will change the name. And a testament to how hard it is to land the plane once you start flying it. It took us about 3 years before we came up with the rebranding of the company. And the rebranded company OpsVeda has really done remarkably well in front of customers, in front of analysts, in the in the marketplace. But, you know, while everything looks good today, things were much harder when you get started.
So what was hard about it when you quit your job from SAP and went outside? You said you had a couple of people on board with you. First of all, how did you convince others to join you on this seemingly crazy journey?
I think inspiration and conviction are two important things. If you are convinced, conviction can be contagious. So if you are convinced, you are able to convince other people. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the family support, as I said earlier. Not everybody has the financial backbone to be able to make a leap along with you. So it was a slow process, hiring the initial set of people who would join the journey. And you know, everybody that started is not with us, right? Because some had to drop off because they couldn't afford to go on. We are a slightly different company. We are a bootstrapped organization. So early on, we took some angel money, and then something interesting happened for us. Mm-hmm. And you know, in hindsight, I'm not necessarily very sure, was it the best thing that could happen to us, or not such a great thing that happened to us. But we found some of our early customers very early on, just from starting in less than 6 months. We signed our first customer. And then we started building the product for that customer. We licensed our product to the first customer in less than 9 months from starting. The advantage of that is that we could afford to continue to inspire people, continue to hire grow the team organically, continue to build the team. At the same time, the company started investing a little bit more in what the first customer wanted. And that's not always a good thing, right? Ultimately, you want a product to be built based upon inputs from, if you can build a product based upon inputs from a dozen customers, it's a different product than what comes out based upon inputs from just a handful of customers early on. So good and bad, but we incubated this company without needing venture money early on. Mm-hmm. And that kind of set the tone for this company to grow organically over the years. We spend what we make, and it's just a bootstrap company, right? That's the approach.
I'm looking at the 2011 version of your website, vssod.com, and there I was very excited to see the investor link in there. And since you mentioned we are not taking investor money, then what are these investors about? I clicked on it and I see that it's only a request or an open calling. If you're an investor who wants to contact us, just email us at investors@vssod.com. So I guess there wasn't investors in the beginning. So how did you get your first customer, Sanjay? Because you had this grand vision and no product at that time, right?
Yes. So
who was your first customer, if you're okay to share?
Our first customer was SanDisk Corporation.
Ah, okay. So SanDisk is the place that I work at, for someone listening. My full-time job is at SanDisk. But yeah, SanDisk in 2011 was your first customer.
Yes, SanDisk in 2010 was my first pilot customer. SanDisk in 2011 was the first licensed customer, right? Mm-hmm. And then other customers came through, right? There are customers like Epson in America, they also became a customer. So some of these early customers, as I said, these customers created enough runway for us to continue to innovate on the product and not to worry about venture money.
I'm asking about the first customer because I hear people say that it's so hard to convince the very first one. The second one, maybe I can say that I have one. But the first one, oh my God. So I'm curious to know, how did you convince SanDisk to actually invest with you in this product?
So that's a very good question. I think part of my history plays out here. I came from SAP. The journey that I had within the country and within California prior to starting this company was interesting. So first, I spent a fair amount of time at various large enterprises, even before working for SAP. And then while working at SAP, my role required me to go support large enterprise customers in their journey as they were deploying the product or as they had certain challenges with SAP or if they needed some help from SAP. So in that context, I already had certain established relationships with some of the early customers that we reached out to. So SanDisk was one of those customers with whom that I already had a relationship, which means we already had credibility at SanDisk. we were able to share our vision with them, and it just so happened that vision aligned with some of the pain points that SanDisk had. Yeah. So if everything comes together, I guess you could say we got lucky with the first customer. Otherwise, it's one thing to convince someone to try your product. It's another thing to convince someone to license your technology. So to have an early technology licensee was definitely extremely helpful to us.
How long was that journey for you from the time that you had the first idea to the time that you got someone to license, which I'm assuming is your first revenue as well?
Yes, I think that was approximately 9 months. Mm-hmm.
So you were bootstrapping, not taking a paycheck, trying to burn through your savings and trying to just hustle your way to get a customer through this period.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's how it works every time.
Yes. What was hard about it?
Well, there was nothing hard about it. As I said, having the runway is important. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to have a runway to be able to afford that period. Clearly, once you are a bootstrap company, your behaviors and your expenditures change. When you do not have the ability to hire 10 resources, you try to do with the 2 resources that you have. Mm-hmm. So fast forward, from that time when we had 2 or 3 employees to today, where we are over 50% company or 60% company, it has been a journey. It has been a journey, right? So you spend as much as you can afford, and then you try to make the most of what you have, and that I guess is the major definition for venture.
Yeah. So what was your next step after getting the first few customers? Right. So were you trying to build different products for different customers, or were you trying to get more customers for the existing products that you have? And what was the version of the product at that time that you were trying to sell look like?
So early on when we started, as I said earlier, and I think this is from personal experience, if you get your first customer too easy, you end up building something that while it works perfect for the first customer, it might work well for the first few customers. You realize along the way, as the use cases expand, as the users come in, you realize along the way whether or not your solution is scalable, whether or not your solution, while the problem it needs to be solved for a few customers, but the solution can be leveraged by X number of users. In order to make it a mass market product, you need to make sure that the architecture is scalable. Along the way, what happened? So early on, first version of our product was built on an event processing platform from SAP, and that platform was kind of going out of market. Fast forward about 2.5 years from the time we started the company, along came a fantastic in-memory compute power called SAP HANA from SAP. We saw this new platform. We said, this is the wave. This is the new wave. This is the new architecture. And we said that in order to be successful in the long run, we need to port our existing product onto this new database. Mm-hmm. So earlier we had a solution on top of a complex event processing environment from SAP. 2.5 years later, we decided to leverage SAP in-memory database and build the entire solution stack from scratch on top of that SAP in-memory DB. So there was a journey. Along the way, we had to re-platform our solution. That did take us some time, and rebuilding anything as the architecture is changing can be a tricky thing.
Yeah. What has been your biggest challenge in the 2.5 years leading up to that event of, even before SAP HANA came on board? You talked about a few challenges of rebuilding the whole thing. What was your challenge before that?
The one of the biggest challenge early on when you're starting, so is your solution is not that broad. The mm-hmm. applicability of the version 1 and version 2 of a solution, it is applicable to a specific set of users in very specific set of industry. I still remember, and this is something that I point out to my team quite often, I once went to a customer, and the customer said, okay, so you do real-time visibility into all of this. Show me what all you can do. And we show them the solution, and they said, this is it. Right? So it was at that time, we were only supporting the sales operations process for the target companies that we had. So today, along the way, as we were replatforming our solution, the actual footprint, the user footprint and the solution footprint for our product also enhanced. So today we provide real-time supply chain visibility for large enterprises for all things operations, starting from forecast accuracy management to sales operations, to logistics, to procurement operations, to manufacturing operations, to plant maintenance, to sales and operations execution. So the footprint has expanded. So early on, in the first 2.5 years, the footprint, the solution depth was not the solution breadth was not that great. And customers often used to ask, is this all you do? It might be rocket science, but is that rocket science limited to this use case? We cannot rely on our users. You know, quite often you can't ask your users to envision how many different ways this product could be used. We had to expand the entire solution set so that users need not any longer have to imagine how many different ways I could use this platform. Today, I show them how many different ways they could use a platform. Right? So I think that has changed the kind of discussions we used to have before versus now.
So 2.5 years later, when SAP HANA came, how many employees were at, how big was OpsWith or VSS SOD at that time?
I think around that time, we were probably a dozen and a half, I would say, about 18 people at that time.
And you did you have to scale very quickly after that?
Around that time, it should be 2.5 years later, which means about 3 years ago.
Early 2013.
Yes. Yeah, so early 2013, we also established a wholly owned subsidiary in Bangalore. So when you don't have money, so the multiple reasons, the kind of skill sets that we needed in Silicon Valley, those kinds of skill sets are very hard to find here. When you're competing with Googles and Facebooks and Twitters of this world, it's very hard to find fantastic front-end people in Silicon Valley. So we decided that we will go to the Silicon Valley of India, which is Bangalore. So early on in the first 2.5 years, I was trying to create to seed a team in Bangalore. And in during those days, the effort was, can I hire a subcontractor in Bangalore and maybe onboard a few consultants through that subcontractor? We realized that model was not scalable because those subcontractors providing services to a small company like ourselves, they would only give the leftover resources. So we said the way to secure the future and to hire really top quality people is to have your own entity. So we decided to create a subsidiary in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. And that subsidiary, we were able to hire some really top-notch resources. So that team today has grown to about 45 people. And we have been able to seed a fairly significant caliber team, right?
Did you move back to Bangalore to be able to do this?
No, I did not move back to Bangalore. We did along the way. Everybody says that if you are trying to start something significant in another country, you need to have to make sure that you have good leadership and good strength in that country. So we were fortunate enough to inspire a few senior industry leaders to leave what they were doing and join us in Bangalore. So I do have my head of India. He left some large companies in order to start OpsWith India, and that he was able to recruit the other people. So of course, since we have started the subsidiary, I have to travel to Bangalore, and I enjoy it every time I go there, maybe thrice a year or twice a year. But no move back for me.
Yeah, I'm in the 2013 version of the website, which still was called VSS On Demand, and I see a news flashing on it saying SanDisk performs live demo of experience with VSS On Demand software at SEM 2013. So this is about the time that you were trying to transition over to HANA and trying to get more customers and trying to make your solution more robust, right? And was it also, how are you trying to market yourself and get more visibility into what you're doing at this time?
Well, we were still selling our existing product while we were replatforming our product onto SAP HANA. So that was the executive is still at SanDisk, and he was kind enough to SanDisk has been an extremely referenceable customer for us, and they were speaking for us at that event. Yes.
I see. How did you expand into other industries apart from high tech?
Well, part of it is based upon the customers who came. So the conventional startup wisdom is you focus on one industry, you focus on one sliver of process, just take down every single, you know, typical bowling analogy, take down all the pins, succeed in that industry, and then try to expand to the other industry. So we have this dichotomy. While our solution is we are horizontally focused as well. So Opsveda is trying to be all things operations. So Opsveda stands for operational intelligence. Ops is operations. Veda is intelligence. So we focus on...
How did you come up with that name? Like, it was about 3 years ago that you came up with it. It was a very interesting name.
Well, so a couple of things happened. One, the company, besides the technology grounding of all employees in the company, we also have significant business experience. So most people, most senior leadership in Opsveda has significant, almost 15, 20 plus years of experience in the industry. Almost all of that experience is in the operations space. So we have deep understanding of supply chain, deep understanding of operations, be it sales and manufacturing or logistics or procurement and so on. So operations is our core. So while our platform could support a variety of different horizontal functions, we have decided as a company that we'll focus on operations. And therefore, ops, and then what we are trying to create is also out-of-the-box, ready-to-use content for all operations people. And that's how the name OpsVeda came along.
Yeah. Who named it? Did you come up with the name?
Full disclosure, we had quite a few choices, and some of our key employees, we were all were meeting in our home for a long evening dinner / wine / alcohol, and one of the spouses came up with the name. She selected the name, and we ultimately decided to keep it.
Oh, nice. That's a very persuasive name, and I'm very impressed with the name itself, and I'm glad you shared the story behind how it came up.
Okay.
Tell me about the SAP Incubator program. How did that happen, and when was which period was that in?
The SAP Incubator program, incidentally, when SAP HANA came along, they started a program to entice startups to adopt that platform. Incidentally, Opsveda was the first batch of 10 startups which decided to jump on the HANA bandwagon. Mm-hmm. We are a very early adopter of HANA. We adopted SAP HANA when it was an extremely buggy platform, and everybody even at SAP agrees with that thought process, and it matured over a period of time. So today there are over 2,500 startups leveraging the HANA platform, but we were one of the very first. And I think the benefit of the startup focused team, it's not really an incubator. It is essentially a team of some very good individuals who are focused on making sure that in the ecosystem, companies who are trying to adopt the platform, they get whatever help they need from the SAP ecosystem. For us, the startup focus has been about go-to-market through the SAP channel, and I think that has worked well for us.
So basically, it was a collaboration between SAP guys and other startups which are working on SAP-based platform solutions and trying to help you solving their own bugs that you discover so that you can have more powerful startups built out of SAP HANA. Was that?
Well, no. I wouldn't necessarily categorize it that way. So we are using their platform. They need to make sure that anyone who is using their platform, especially while that platform is evolving, gets whatever technology or go-to-market help they can get. So if you have the go-to-market help, there is more reason to adopt SAP HANA. So that has been one of our reasons why we have looked at it.
What made you adopt it, be one of the early adopters?
Well, as I said earlier, we had a few customers and we realized very quickly that the first solution set that we built, while it would do the job for what the customers bought it for, our vision of being able to provide big data predictive capability to our customers, to a large network of customers, to support the entire end-to-end supply chain, and to be able to provide visibility across the supply chain will require significantly higher amounts of data, will require significantly higher amount of in-memory processing. And at that time, when we looked at SAP HANA, it was one of the premium, well, maybe not the only, but definitely one of the up-and-coming in-memory platforms. And we said, this is a good platform to adopt. The whole mothership SAP is behind it. There was a time when SAP used to say HANA more often than they said SAP. So we said, the mothership is going to support the platform. And since it the platform has support, we can't go wrong by adopting the HANA platform.
We talked a lot about the things that went well, right? The things that you succeeded in doing. How about something that was a mistake that you happened at OpsVeda or VSS Sword? What was your biggest mistake, so to say, business-wise?
Well, I wouldn't say mistake. I would just say part of the learning as you are on this journey. So it's easy for the founders. It's easy for those who are living and breathing the product every single day to stand in front of a customer and paint the picture of how this product is going to transform their business. We thought about scaling our business early on with the help of outside salespeople. So early on, our efforts at outside sales were not very successful. So in the first year, the second year, we made some investment in sales, and that didn't really pan out. It didn't necessarily pan out, right? So I think there was an assumption that we would be able to scale this product with the help of folks who may or may not understand the intricacies of the supply chain. I think something that we had to correct along the way. Other than that, I can't really call it a mistake. I just call that a learning.
So you hired a sales team when you say outside sales, it's not another company who is doing the sales for you. It's your own sales people.
Right? Yes, our own salespeople. So expecting salespeople to be able to evangelize early on is hard. When the software itself is changing shape every day, right? So today is a very fast pace of evolution. Not everyone can keep up with it. So clearly sales had been a challenge, and that's something that we decided to take that challenge head on too early, I believe. That would be one learning.
What else would you do rather if you were to redo it?
That's a hard question. I think that's a question I can answer when we successfully land this plane. I think we still have significant ways to go. We have a number of large enterprise customers, but till the platform becomes omnipresent, until we have convinced a much larger set of customers about the opportunity that real-time analytics and real-time operational intelligence presents, I think it's hard to say. Maybe you can follow up in a year. I'll tell you after we have successfully landed this plane, and then we can tell you what we
do. I would love to do it. What does landing the plane mean for you? When do you know that you have landed? What is that instance? What is the landmark?
The landmark is, and I'll tell you exactly what I tell my team internally. I need my dog food to be eaten by 1,000 customers. When 1,000 customers are using the product and being successful with the product every single day, then the job is done. Now, whatever it takes to scale this company in order to go take this product to those 1,000 different large enterprise customers is a journey that we need to take. That's what landing the plane for me means.
So 1,000 customers, would you be willing to share how far on the journey are you right now?
No, I would not like to share that information yet, but it's definitely...
Right now, it's in double digits. Right now, it's in double digits. Okay, that's good. How about any other success metric with OpsVeda that you can actually share?
So startups, I think one of the most profound learnings, because this is a true startup and I spent more than 5 years in this company, one of the most profound experiences and learnings for me is that it is a privilege running a small company and acquiring a set of team members and then growing the team, taking your product to various customers. in this journey, the most important and cherished privilege for me is the people that you pick up along the way. So there are a number of people who take the leap of faith with you. You know, these people and their collective intelligence and their collective contribution is what makes the company. So the honor for me is to have these people along with me as we build the product, right? And as this team grows, the pride and the honor grows as well, right? So today, collectively, we are 50, 60 people. The good milestone will be when I get to 200 people, I think it's a good milestone.
Now that including the people in India?
Including the people in India, yes.
I see. And having these people taking the leap of faith, like you said, with you, does it also bring along with it a certain sense of pressure for you to deliver?
Of course, there's a significant amount of pressure. There's a pressure every quarter, there's a pressure every month. Absolutely, there is a pressure because a lot of people have taken the faith. Mm-hmm. They are all counting on significant. But again, there is the pressure from your internal team. There is a pressure from your customers because you're always trying to position the opportunity, the transformation opportunity, the fundamental shift or opportunity that you present to your customer. There is pressure from customers to make sure that they derive the value that we espouse. Mm-hmm. And then there is pressure from employees to make sure that enough number of customers are indeed seeing the value that we think we are bringing to the market. Right. So yes, there is pressure.
Tremendous pressure. How do you handle it? I'm sure that is something that all of us in whatever level positions we are, we'll experience that, right? So I'm curious to know, how do you handle that pressure?
Well, the opportunity justifies every pressure. Mm-hmm. The opportunity of fundamentally creating a brand from scratch without any venture investment, mm-hmm. with the help of the phenomenal team that we have put together, right? It means a big opportunity. It means an opportunity. That opportunity means something to everybody. Different people, different roles take that opportunity in a different manner. Mm-hmm. But I think we have an opportunity, and that opportunity is what drives us. And that opportunity is what helps us manage the pressure as well.
You said early on you did not need the venture money because you started getting customers right away who were paying you. How about later for scaling purposes? Did you ever consider taking venture capitalist money versus continuing to bootstrap your company?
We have considered taking venture money along the way. We've had it has never been the front and center of our existence. Because along the way, the customer, so we are a customer funded company. Never say never though. I mean, we might take venture money sometime in the future, but ultimately the best venture money comes when you don't need it. That's what I tell my team as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell my customers as well, right? As long as my customers pay us for the value that we bring to them, we can survive without venture money, but I'm sure there will be venture money. It's a matter of valuation. It's a matter of opportunity. It's also a matter of, you know, how much independence do you have before you take venture money versus after you take venture money. So there are a number of considerations. It's just that the best time to raise venture money is when you don't need it. Today we still need it, and therefore we are probably not raising it.
Mm. So with the amount of media coverage that you're having and the exposure, I'm sure a lot of people are knocking on your door to actually do that, right? Venture capitalist, I meant.
There are always people knocking on the door. Are they the right people knocking on the door is the question. Mm. Right? Because if it is never an open question, if it is a win-win situation. So the right win-win opportunity, I think both sides are waiting for.
Over the last 1 year, in 2015 specifically, if I look at OpsVeda, right? There has been a lot of media coverage for OpsVeda as such. There has been extremely extensively marketed and Gartner also named OpsVeda as one of the cool companies of 2015 in supply chain excellence, right? So was it a conscious decision as a company that you wanted to move towards more exposure?
I think less so a conscious decision. If I had the option, I would have moved for this exposure a year before or even 2 years before that. It is just the relative product maturity. So as product matures, as customer experiences mature, along with that comes exposure. So Gartner saw our product. They began to see our product in 2014. Our UI matured significantly, right? Today, our UI is quite often compared to some fantastic leading products out there, such as Tableau and ClickView, etc. It is compared to SAP Fury and so on and so forth. So the UI matured, the depth and the breadth in the product matured, the functionality matured. Gartner saw it. Gartner named us as a cool vendor last year. Gartner named us in the market guide for operational intelligence platforms last year. We also won the HANA Innovation Award last year. Two of our customers, Global Brands Group and Genentech, decided to also participate along with us in the HANA Innovation Awards. And one of those customers actually won the award as well. So I think all of these milestones came together, and that resulted in more media coverage. It was not something that we planned specifically. We are a small company. So as I said, we don't invest in PR and marketing as much. So it's just a matter of the logical progression of things.
I see. So it was reaching something like a tipping point. And that is the incubation period of 4 or 5 years that it took, and finally it did reach the tipping point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Sanjeev, this has been such a blast. And what advice would you give for someone who has an idea, who wants to figure out how to start their own company and want to be entrepreneurs, and specifically immigrants who are people who are coming from outside the US? So what advice would you have for them, having done this for 6 years?
I have not finished my journey, so I'm not yet fully qualified to offer that advice. But my few words would be: don't do it for the money, and don't think it is easy. You have to believe it. If you don't believe it, nobody else will believe it. Right? So it's not about this is a hot new idea, and therefore I need to go in this direction. It has to be about This is the wave of the future, and I personally believe it, and I think I'm the best person to solve this problem. If you pass those musters, then I think it might be a worthwhile journey. Just also make sure that you have the runway. It always I'm not the first one who would say this. I know somebody else said this before me, but it always takes twice as long and twice as and then it costs twice as much, if not more, in order to build what you want to build. So tighten your seatbelt. It can be a long time. And don't always, venture money is not the only way to get it done. Mm-hmm.
So along your journey of OpsVeda, what are some of the resources that helped you and that you can recommend for others?
Well, there are lots of people who support you in that journey. But for us, We did have, especially this being my second time, we did have good legal help. Mm-hmm. So establishing an entity, you can't wing it, right? You need to have a strong structural and legal foundation for the company. So we did that early on, and I think that has been extremely helpful to us. We also decided to patent our idea early on. So we have some patented data models, which we have business methods, which we have patented. So I think that has been helpful. And also make sure that that you have a network of people who can give you honest feedback. Mm-hmm. That is important. So we have an advisory board which gives us feedback along the way. And I think leveraging that network is extremely important.
How did you convince people to join your advisory board when you started out?
Well, everything, all convincing links it back to the opportunity that you create in the market. It's always, whether it's an advisor, it's an employee, it's a customer, it's a channel partner, it's an event. It's always about, here is the gap, here is the opportunity. Come with me on a journey and we will go change this world. So that has been the theme, and I think that's the theme. It just takes a different shape and form,
yeah,
depending upon who the audience is, but it's always, it has to be linked to the opportunity.
And it connects itself back to the advice that you gave, that to get that right first, and that should be the reason for you to actually do a company as well.
Yeah, and if you believe it, if you've already done that homework, then why won't others believe?
Yeah, absolutely. Sanjeev, thank you so much for joining me today.
Rohit, it's a pleasure. Thank you for your questions that I have enjoyed this conversation.
That was Sanjeev, the founder of OpsVeda. Sanjeev started his journey with a vision, and he kept that vision throughout his entrepreneurial journey. That helped him with several things like getting the right board members, getting the right employees, getting the right people to align with him, and getting the right customers to trust him. So I learned today that starting with a vision is very important. All the show notes from today's episode can be found at breakingtheborders.com/Sanjeev, S-A-N-J-I-V. And make sure you subscribe while you're on the page to get latest updates. Until next week, stay ambitious.